This is a replay of the Thursday night, October 12th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and if it's on your mind, as usual, it'll be on mine. As long as it's inconsequential, nonsensical, or otherwise entertaining, we'd love to talk about it. Yes, just avoid the things that matter. We hear enough about that the other 21 hours of the day. But I dare say this does matter. Not in the political sense, that's for sure. But a couple of years ago, I told you that Archie Bell had had a fairly mild stroke and on the right side of his brain, which, you know, that affects the left side of his body. And he was left-handed, so that was tough. However, the left side of the brain affects singing, so theoretically, he should still be able to do that. Now, unfortunately, he is still in a nursing facility. And bottom line is that he is alive and I guess doing as well as can be expected, but still not home. And he would love to hear from fans. So if you, as I did, loved Archie Bell and the Drells of Houston, Texas, he is in Houston, and his address is Archie Bell, Post Office Box 24334, Houston, 77229. And I'll put that on Raleigh.net as well. I did a couple of years ago, but, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Oh, that was one of Jimmy P's requests, and we'll get to that before the night is over, I do hope. But nonetheless, I was actually shocked to hear that he was still in a nursing facility. And I don't know what the deal was. As I say, I know he had a fairly mild stroke, and then I know there was an infection issue after that. And then he was going to rehab. And after that, they said his prognosis was very good, but he's still there. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. But you may want to write. I know I will. All right. So 888-876-5593. And of course, before the night is over, you know that we'll talk about Rudolf Isley. Yeah. All right. And very sad. 84 years old, though, life well lived, that's for sure. Has been away from the Isley Brothers for years because he left the group and became a minister and died in South exurban, I'll say, Chicago, not far from Linda and Richardson Park, actually. So we'll tell you about that, too. But last night at the end of the show, I felt so bad because James, who is the sender of literally, I always say something like 4,892 stories. But the reality is, while that is an exaggeration, it's not nearly the exaggeration you might imagine. James sends tons of stories every day, and many of them not suitable for this show because they are political in nature. nature. But and then some we just avoid because, you know, there's only so many heinous murders you can take in one sitting. But others certainly bring quite a lot of interest and attention, at least I think so. And I will admit, as we welcome James, that I knew he'd be first tonight because I promised, and I wouldn't let him down on that. But I haven't read today's story, so I don't know if this one was in it. So, James, I don't know if I'm blindsiding you or not, but just as I sat down, John said to me, well, did you hear about the brain-eating bacteria in Nevada? I said, oh, no, not another story. No. Have you heard about this?
I have. I think that might have been one of them. The funny thing, my phone, for some reason, yesterday and today, didn't really do a whole lot. Usually it's like story. It didn't really want to like pull up anything, and it didn't want to send anything.
Well, that's interesting.
I guess they got fatigue.
Well, that's amazing considering how many stories you did that did get through yesterday. I'm impressed. Of course, it's tougher when the stories come without a subject line. But then again, some of the subject lines are hilarious. I love Delta passenger sitting in first class bizarrely attacks the snack basket. I don't know about you, but I'm usually not willing to eat anything they're willing to serve me on planes. But this is a first class passenger apparently behaving erratically and attacking the snack basket. Atlanta to Seattle. I guess that was the in-flight entertainment.
I had to admit when I saw that, I said, okay, he must have been really hungry.
Well, I don't know. Then he attacked the flight attendant, and to their credit, the rest of first class all stood up and restrained him after he hit the flight attendant. And the plane was not diverted, which is the best news of all, as far as I'm concerned. You never hate to be inconvenienced that way. But they did restrain him in tough cuffs, and other people are saying, I don't know if he was drunk or it was a mental issue, but apparently after attacking the cart and hitting the flight attendant, he tried to open the door.
Uh-oh. Okay. maybe he had visions of D.B. Cooper.
Right. Who knows? But I can see. I'll tell you, if I was on a flight and somebody was trying to open the door, yes, I'd try to restrain him as well. Yes, I think that's...
because I'd say, no, we're not interested in going with you going.
So now I want to know, he's in first class. Did he pay for the ticket or were these like free points from a credit card?
So. You might know something. They don't really say, but you never know.
No, exactly.
Maybe he realized he didn't want to go where he wanted to go and wanted to go someplace else. I'm like thinking, hey, you've already, it's not like you can change at the last minute.
Well, absolutely. So there you have it. And you have a number of actually unruly passengers I saw today. And then Delta will not allow customers who book economy tickets to use the airport lounges. Hell, they'd be better off if they don't let them use the planes. So I'm not...
Because considering the things that you might catch, you're probably better off.
Right. So then you have a man livid after an entitled elderly couple took his first class seats and refused to relocate.
Oh, my goodness. Well, when you can't see beyond what your own perspective, it becomes a very defining moment, and not in a good way.
Yeah, I was looking at the conversation between the guy who paid for the first class seats and the two people from coach who took it, and apparently the man comes up to them and says, are you saying you want me to sit in your seats? And the older people said, yes, that would be nice, thank you. And I paid extra for these. He says, but I paid extra for these seats and I'd like to sit in them, please move. And the older person says, oh, no, it's not the bed. There's plenty of leg room. And he said, yes, there's plenty of leg room in my seats because I paid for them. I'll help you move your bag if you need it. And apparently then a flight attendant comes by who tries to intervene. By the way, this is as they're getting on the plane. So now the line of passengers who are going to be trying to find their seats is like down the chute pretty much. And then the... older couple says, this man wants us to move seats. The flight attendant turns to the guy who paid for the seats and said, sir, please go to your allocated seats. And he says, wait a minute, here's my ticket. These people are sitting in my seats. I paid extra because I need the legroom. And so then the flight attendant says to the older couple, well, you're going to have to move to your own seats. You have not paid for these seats. And then the old people said, well, can I please have an upgrade? Sorry, this flight is full. That's not possible. And so then the old people look shocked and astonished. And now other people on the plane are glaring at him for taking the seats of elderly people, which were his seats to begin with. And, you know, so he's getting stink eyes from everybody else on the flight. People are lined up outside the door trying to get on. And, you know, bottom.
This reminds me of the line from Cool Hand Luke is quite appropriate. What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Right, right. So, but apparently when this article first came online, the guy, by the way, never did get the seats he paid for. And I guess he wasn't willing to make it that much of an issue because who knows, he could have been arrested. But in any, I hope that he'll be trying to get his money back. But in any event, when this went online, other people were writing that things like that had happened to them. And one guy said, just a few weeks ago, I had the upgraded exit row seat for the legroom. I board. There's a guy in his early 20s in my seat. I let him know he's in the seat I paid for. And his response is, oh, no, it's cool. I'm a veteran. What? And the guy said, I didn't understand that. I'm a vet, too. Doesn't make you special.
You want to know, okay, the guy, you want to know what I think probably happened that in the story, probably they didn't say it, but probably the guy figured that wanted decided to be the bigger person, just simply, I'll just leave it alone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all you can do, really, unless you want, you know, an international incident, including air marshals.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all you can do. But, yeah, you sent me three or four, but what's really frightening is at the end of the stories, they have similar stories you may want to read. Apparently, there's more emergency doors being opened mid-flight, or at least attempted. You have another guy who stabbed a flight attendant in the neck. Drunk passengers terrifying children. On and on it goes. So I drive. That's my answer. Just wherever it is, drive.
Yeah, but then again, you got crazies there.
Well, oh, on the road, absolutely. And you know, you have many stories for that too. So, of all the stories you gave me, which is literally hundreds this week alone, what was your favorite?
Okay, there was the one where they thought this kid was missing. And then they found him miles away. He was somehow he drifted away. And I'm like, well, I'm glad about that. But on a similar, unfortunate note, there was an autistic baby that somehow got several miles away and died.
Oh, I hate that.
Which I'm thinking, autistic. First off,
who didn't notice?
I'm like, they're in their own world, basically.
Yeah, and what adult didn't notice? I did love the story of the 2-year-old girl who, by the way, lost in Michigan, who was found using one of her dogs as a pillow. That was cute.
Oh, that was beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Missing in remote woods of Michigan. Yeah.
But unfortunately, there was too few of those ones.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
But okay.
Still 2 years old and 3 miles from her home. That scared the heck out of the parents. She apparently left home and they didn't
luckily,
see it.
But luckily, man's best friend, or
yes,
in this case, best friend.
Exactly. She was one of the small dogs as a pillow, and the other dog laid right next to her to keep her warm and safe. So that was a great story.
Yeah, unfortunately, then you see people that you say, you're a parent, and you figure this is okay to do to a kid?
Yeah.
Okay, at this point, you kind of say, I guess you wonder, I know you didn't take parenting classes, so I'm kind of wondering, what did you take? Okay. If you took them, was your instructor Hannibal Lecter?
Yeah, maybe they need an instruction manual as you're leaving the hospital. I'm not sure. Something in comic book form with pictures.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that because every time I hear the story, and I'm like thinking, please tell me there's some adults in the room here.
Oh,
then I realized, no. And then, of course, then I realized why most of my, there was like 10 classmates I knew who wanted to become teachers. 10 years later, none of them had become teachers. And then when I see stories about where either the student is like a, then there's some that basically, there's some stories where you wonder what's happening to the people who are entering. It's like some will say, I think some hot kid to give me my father my baby.
There was another one you sent that was particularly interesting, because I think if we were going to do a manual of shoplifting 101, I think the first thing we would advise would-be criminals is don't call attention to yourself. I can't imagine a better rule of thumb than that. So here are three women in underwear and shower caps that are shoplifting. Oh, that won't create any attention. And meanwhile, when the clerks come over, they threaten to tase them.
Can I escort you to Mantino? Yeah. It's closed, but we can lock you up in there. Yeah. It's just you.
Right, if it's just you, I love that. Well, and of course, we should mention that these three shoplifting women in their undies, this was a supermarket, and their entire bevy of goods came to $7.
Oh, I got a great story to tell, and it wasn't online because I heard about this, a written one. This was about, 3-4 years, just before the pandemic. Three young women got arrested at a Walmart, right, near Evergreen Park. I think the total amount of what they shoplifted was, I think, about a little over $10, maybe $11, $12. It was panties.
Well, there
to
you,
get, they you need to have yourself with a record because you need underwear.
Oh, God. Well, as always, 9 zillion stories and every one of them worthwhile. Like I said, we can't share most of them, but good.
There was one other.
Yes.
Okay. A shoplifter. Okay. Forgot their phone. They came back for it.
Oh yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, obviously these aren't rocket scientists, to say the least. Always good stuff. Love it.
I was reminded of an old section that used to be in the Chicago Reader that was basically called News of the Weird, and basically there was one section called The Thinning of the Hood.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And News of the Weird is still online, by the way. And it's odder than ever.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, the Reader could definitely use that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, although the last one was actually pretty good, had some real meat to it.
Okay.
I'm not saying it had the comic, I'm saying red meat. Thank goodness.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
There was a comic strip, yeah.
And on that note, I had to give you the time because, my God, you waited so long and you gave me so many stories. So thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you have a great weekend. John is sounding good.
Thanks, appreciate that. All right, before we get to Eduardo, and he's up next with his stories from Florida, we got a request from Jane in Milwaukee, Marianne in Chicago as well, but I did find out about the Nevada story, and it's the exact same amoeba. Yeah, enters through the nose. All right, details coming up on WGN Radio.
Elaine, this is Rudolph out here. If you don't come out tonight, I'm gonna knock on your door, ring on your bell, tap on your window too. If you don't come out tonight while the moon is bright, I'm gonna knock and ring and tap until you do. I'm gonna knock on your door, call out your name, wake up the town, you see. I'm gonna hoot and a howl like a lovesick owl until you say you're going out with me. Hey, little girl.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yep, that's early Isley's, that's for sure. 1959 on RCA, and that was Rudy, as you heard, talking to his wife, Elaine. And, sadly, heart attack today in southern suburbs of Chicago. And he'd been a preacher for the last many years. But the Isley Brothers were originally from Cincinnati. They're from Blueish. And they were doing gospel stuff. And, in fact, the Dixie Hummingbirds were idols. But they also were doing secular stuff, loved Billy Ward and the Dominoes and all that. And they actually won a competition on Ted Mack's Amateur Hour, which, of course, led to a bunch of tours. And that led to them being in touch with Richard Barrett in New York, who put him in touch with a bunch of record producers, including George Goldner. And they did some songs for him. And then they wound up on RCA. They were also on Mark X, I think, and a couple others. But on RCA, that's where they did Go and Knock on Your Door. And, of course, absolutely nothing at that point. But it wouldn't be long before they recorded something that they had written, Shout, and kind of mixing a gospel feel with doo-wop harmonies, and it was irresistible all the way around. And I think it was first done at on the road, and they did it at a club in D.C. where it really, really took off. So in any event, so did their career, and they had moved their entire operations to New Jersey and, of course, formed Teaneck Records in 1964. And, there were personnel changes over the years, sadly, deaths or what have you. In fact, at first they formed as teens, and there was a fourth brother, Vernon. And Vernon died as a child, and I think it was a bicycle accident or some such thing, but I don't think he was more than about 13 or 14, as I recall. I know, I could have printed all this out rather than doing it from memory, but I'm pretty sure that's close. In any event, that caused them not to record it, not to sing at all, and then later they got together again. Ronnie, I think, became the lead vocalist. And as far as ages, O'Kelly Jr., of course, the oldest, named after his father, O'Kelly Isley, who was a vaudeville performer. And he was born in 1937 on Christmas Day. And then Rudolph, and 1939. And then Ronald was born in 1941. And like I say, then there was Vernon, who died very early. And so over the years, a lot of changes, all family changes for the most part. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that's the case, because I know the younger Isleys, Ernie and Marvin, Chris Jasper, their brother-in-law, that's true. Chris Jasper was in this group, but now we're into the 70s as far as that goes. And ultimately, as I say, Rudy left the road and recording behind. He and Elaine married a year before he was singing to her, "I'm Gonna Knock on Your Door," in 1958. And, I did not hear, but again, I should have read all the obits beforehand. I don't know if Elaine is still with us. I hope so. Though, tough to lose your husband, that's for sure. So, apparent heart attack yesterday, 84 years old. Rest in peace, Rudolph Isley. And so much more about them. A very accomplished family in many, many different ways. And inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1992, where they absolutely belong. I'm trying to think about Marvin. Marvin Isley was in it for a while, and he died around 2010. But you can read all about it. But that's the deal. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. Eduardo is in Tampa. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Good evening.
What's happening?
Well, a couple of stories. It was a rainy day today, so I was going to say, I think some of this rain could have gone over there to Louisiana, because they're going to be having the saltwater problem over there.
Yeah, you know, it's always something, isn't it?
Yeah, so they're throwing water or pumping water in there, and because it's obviously something that you can't boil your way out of.
Well, you're right, and this is there's a mass of salt water from the Gulf that has forced its way. It's interesting how nature does this. I think up through parts of Mississippi, And so you've got emergency declarations trying to protect the drinking water supply. And, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, municipal water supply is certainly purified to hell and back. But when there's something that occurs that's not normally in the list of contaminants, I don't know what you do. And I do know that it probably won't reach New Orleans, not sure, but you know, they've been watching it since way down south in the Gulf of Mexico and you know, places where very Cajun type places. So I don't know. They're thinking Belle Chasse by tomorrow. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I always think like, oh my God, they get so much rain, and now we're talking about like a drought. They're not getting enough, so it's like a complete 180.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's nature.
Yeah. And then the other one I was going to talk about is I know you have one of your listeners, a trucker, or one or two maybe. So the CBS Weekend did a story about accidents of people coming out of the expressway onto the ramp, and there's truckers parked there because there isn't space for them to, I guess there's a rest stop nearby. So they're just parking out on the ramp. And at night, there's been accidents because I guess the truckers didn't have lights on, and then the car hits the truck.
Well, where exactly is this?
Well, they had one where they said it happened in San Antonio, and then there was a Greyhound bus in the summertime that in Illinois.
Interesting. Now, and you know, I'm obviously completely unaware of this, but not the least bit surprised. Is the problem that there's just no truck parking available?
Yeah, they're saying that there isn't. They're not finding enough space for these guys to park, and they're just getting the closest thing, like the ramp, coming up the expressway.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me. I'm sorry to say. Because it's just like all the areas that have legislated pretty much trucks out of existence without realizing that, of course, I don't care what it is, when you go to the store, it arrived on a truck. And so when you're talking about areas that have now zoned out overnight parking and things of this, or there's less rest stops or that will accommodate them and all that, what do you do? Because, you know, truckers operate within an inch of their life these days on hours of service and when they can drive and when they can't drive. And so they're in harm's way if they if those, you know, hours have run out and it's time for them to be parked.
Oh, sure.
And now there's no place to park. So obviously, if we're talking about big rigs that are parked in such a way that you know, cars traversing the interstate are likely to run into them,
right,
if they don't have lights, that's a problem on every level. It's a truck parking problem, but the other thing is that we've gotten so far on the interstates from the original regulations, how wide the lanes had to be, how much of a shoulder there had to be. There were so many hardcore rules, and almost all of that has been violated to hell and back. So I'd be curious in these areas what the interstate was like there. You know, what was the lane size? What was the shoulder width? Where was the nearest parking? But you got many people who are all about, well, you know, we don't want trucks here. We don't want the noise. We don't. Well, then fine. Then hopefully you don't need to shop.
Yeah, and they interviewed a couple of congressmen and even the transportation secretary. So it's got their attention.
Well, it should. It absolutely should. I don't see how you can cause drivers to operate under hours of service when they absolutely have to stop driving at a point in time, and there's nowhere for them to park. Now, in some cases, they can't park on the shoulder because that's illegal. I don't know what happens then. I know Texas does allow it. But I saw a statistic a while ago that for every truck on the road, like it was 10 trucks to a parking space, that kind of thing, that there, it just didn't exist. So, you know, somebody's going to have to do something. And
I hope so.
Oh, I do too. And you know, you used to talk to the people who were in OIDA. That's the Owner Operator Association. I should have them on again and find out what, because they would be on top of this, just all over.
Oh yeah,
this.
That'd be a great that'd be a great interview. Definitely.
I think I will. So because I know they've been addressing the issue for like years. But what you're saying now is that it's gotten to many accidents, not just the occasional accident. Didn't something pass the House earlier in the year? And I don't know what happened to that bill. Of course, I don't know if there is a House anymore, who's the Speaker, whatever. I have no idea.
Yeah, but, I think there was like a transportation bill that passed.
Something that passed in the House. Because I know Todd Spencer, who's president of OIDA, he had put out a release, and this is quite a while ago. This is, I think, while John was still in the hospital. He had put out a release saying that they passed a bill that was addressing this. But, of course, that's just the House. It didn't necessarily mean that it hit the Senate. But it absolutely was there as far as something. So, yeah, I've got to have them on to find out what happened to the Senate and what you know, sadly, accidents like these, you hate to hear it, but I'll tell you what, that certainly brings the problem more top of mind, and maybe there will be more happening. I just went to OIDA's website and Landline now is their magazine, and OIDA has launched a truck parking information webpage, so I'll check that out too.
Okay.
All right, good deal.
Oh, and just one more thing. So on the job front, I got applied for two positions, one during the day and one during the night, and I'm hoping to get the one for the day. I just prefer.
Well, yeah, me too. I want you to call. But so tell me about
night out,
right. Tell me about the jobs. What would you be doing?
Well, one of them is checking in people. That's the one during the day. The one that's kind of like the night out is where you're kind of like next to the patient. If they need something, you go and get the nurse. They don't want to have somebody like the nurse doing something basic like that.
Okay.
So they could just talk to the patient, see how they're doing, help them go to the bathroom. So it's kind of basic stuff there. That's something, you know, the nurse, you don't want. Nurse can be free up to do something more
medical.
There you go.
I'll tell you what, you'd be doing God's work because, man, you're in the hospital and you got to go to the bathroom and there's no orderly, nobody to help you, man. That's a nightmare. So you certainly would be a lot of people's heroes with that.
Yeah, I know when my mother was in the hospital in July, that nurse looked like she didn't want to be doing that or she was tired, one or the other.
Well, yeah, and you'll see other things. You know, I've seen situations where aides or orderlies have actually just shouted at patients, "Oh, hold it!" You know, so these are unacceptable answers, of course. So
but that's a good way of, you know, putting your staff.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
All
because
right.
You could have somebody else.
Yes, of
based
course.
On their knowledge, you know, in that position, and then somebody like a nurse doing more medical stuff.
Yeah, of course. All right, keep me posted.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I want to know. All right, good luck.
We'll see what happens, yeah.
All right,
okay,
thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
You too.
Thank you.
And that's where we'll pick it up with Jane, with Marianne and James in Oregon coming up on WGN Radio.
Every time I call you on the phone, they tell me that you're not at home. But last night when I called you, before I said hello, I could hear you. By chance, you found somebody new, and you don't know what to say or do. I'd feel better when I called you if you asked me.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That is Chuck Jackson, and one of Scotty's favorites for sure. Although that was a request from Jimmy P. In fact, his last group of six before one that he gave me today. That's the sixth. I played the other five, although I think he said that he didn't hear them all. Well, we can always play them again. But in any event, Tell Him I'm Not Home, and the gal who's not home is one Doris Troy. Indeed. So 1963 on Wand. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Jane and her requests, and Marianne and James and Cindy, and there's still room available for you. But now, about this amoeba. Right. Actually, there have been deaths. The interesting thing is not how many, it's how likely you are to die if you get it. Now, between 1962 and 2002, 157 people were infected. Only four survived. That means the death rate is more than 97%. But the interesting thing is how you contract this particular amoeba. And if you're wondering, it's the Naegleria fowleri. And it can cause deadly primary amoebic meningocephalitis, that's PAM, which destroys brain tissue. Now, as you know, you've heard about the triangle of death on the face and all that, and the brain is like an e-ticket, the nose, I should say, is like an e-ticket to the brain, except don't lose sleep over this completely, because believe me, drug manufacturers have wanted to capitalize on this for forever doing research, because of course, if they're looking for certain neurological drugs, if they can bypass that blood-brain barrier and get there through delivery nasally, well, that's something of interest. But it hasn't been as easy as it seems. But occasionally amoeba enters the nose, usually during submersion in fresh water. Yeah, usually while swimming, and then that's pretty much say goodnight, everybody. And so it was today that it's been discovered at Lake Mead. Now, what I don't know, officials in Nevada are warning visitors of the brain-eating amoeba. And what I don't know is how they know this. It's been found in the hot springs at below Hoover Dam. Certainly, you can test the water and see it, but is there an infected individual who in fact made it obvious that that's the problem? Earlier this year, in fact, this summer, I think it was late July, there was a teenager, a 17-year-old Georgia girl, who died after being infected while swimming with a lake and friends. You've also had a couple people who died because they irrigated their nose with fresh water. Now, I don't know that it came from the tap. I would certainly hope that this is something, a particulate, which is, filtered out. But I don't know. What I do know is that when the weather is warm and when you're in a fresh area lake, do your best not to breathe the water. All right, so that's the deal from Lake Mead. So, all right, 888, we'll talk about happier things, like Jane's request in Milwaukee. So, Jane, welcome back to WGN Radio. Jane gave up. All right, well, it happened. She was on hold a long time, so I don't know what she wanted to hear, but she'll call back when the mood strikes her, and hopefully we'll get to her sooner. Now, do we still have Marianne in Chicago?
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing tonight?
All right, how about yourself?
Okay. excuse me, I'm sorry. I called about a particular subject, but I heard talking with Eduardo.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that I was on before him because I wanted to know if he got his hot water problem fixed.
I assume he did, because we've not heard about that again. So I assume that the hot water is fine.
Well, it was fine for him, but he said it wasn't hot enough for his mother.
Well, right. No, well, and I understand that. Everybody's got their different tolerances. But all you have to do is turn up the temperature.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But, you know, I don't know. You talked to Lou Manfredini, and it sounded a little more complicated than that.
It's really not.
I know. But I'm a girl, so I didn't want to say nothing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other side of that, of course, is that you're not supposed to. There are regulations that prohibit, say, a plumber from turning it beyond a certain degree because they don't want to scald you. But that doesn't mean that a knowledgeable homeowner can't set it anywhere they well want. Though.
Oh, yeah, that's like when you buy a shower head and it's got that little plastic water saver piece in there.
Right, right.
You unscrew it, pull it out, and there you got your shower.
Yeah, and that's fairly common as well, removing flow restrictors. Sometimes they're harder than other times, but what is really important when you start to do that is to figure out what water pressure do you have coming to the head. Before it's restricted, what's coming there? Because in many places, especially with old pumps or whatever, doesn't matter if you pull that flow restrictor or not, you're not going to get more than, you know, 2.4 in terms of volume. So, you know, it's not all that simple.
Well, fortunately, the ones I've had to take out were simple.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There was enough water flow.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it was like trying to rinse your hair under a light rain. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely I do. Well, they'll take them down at 1.8 ppm, which is pretty undesirable. But, you know, it's interesting what most municipalities will consider tolerable for the water supplier may not be tolerable to you. Like 40 GPM might, you know, they might say, yeah, that's legal. Well, fine, but I don't want to shower in it. You know, so part of it is what do you have coming in and are you going to boost it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but when I was on hold, you had your mic open?
Oh, no, I actually didn't have my mic open. I was talking with Adam at WGN.
Oh, okay. I heard you talking about the trucking incident and all that stuff.
Yeah, Adam keeps us on the air. And you didn't hear Adam's end of it at this particular studio. You heard my end of it. But Adam.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Adam heard it. We had a conversation.
Yeah. But you know what I wanted to add was, you know, with James, with his story, I don't know if it's everywhere, but you're familiar with the Chicago area. All the Oases are closed.
No, I know. This is as I was saying.
That's where they used to park their trucks overnight,
right.
Get gassed
right.
up. There was a little shopping area, yada, yada. And now they've almost all closed. So where do they go?
Well, this is a problem coast to coast. For every 10 trucks on the road, there might be one parking spot. And I think actually the ratio is worse than that. But that is a huge problem. And the problem is that right now, truckers are not only are they dealing with hours of service, which is draconian, but electronic logs. So it's absolutely recorded the minute they have to stop. And the minute they have to stop is the minute they have to stop. There aren't any exceptions to hours of service. So if you know you're coming up on that and you've got nowhere to park, you're in harm's way. And that's why I've said all along, these municipalities that don't allow overnight truck parking and things like that, I think the trucker should just say, okay, then we don't deliver to you. Because tell you, I don't care what you're buying. It came on a truck.
You're right. And it's the same thing they were talking about. You know, you couldn't pay me enough to be a trucker nowadays.
No.
That, but, you know, they have to maintain a certain distance from the car in front of them.
Well, yeah, I know what you're talking about there. Yeah, good luck.
But, you know, if you maintain more than a car space between you and the car in front of you, you know, somebody's going to squeeze in.
Well, and most of them are violating that. But there's many, many rules that the trucks can report back to them and all that. But sure, the reasons that folks chose that career in the 60s and 70s, when I used to deal directly with truckers regularly, is very different from what's there now. Because, you know, it used to be you got in the truck, you shut the door. There was no cell phone. There was no Qualcomm. There was no following you. This was,
a paper map. You had to know the bridges and the heights of everywhere you were going.
The big thing is you were alone. You weren't being tracked within an inch of your life. That's the bottom line to that. And so now you are. You know, you're practically they're practically registering your breath. And so when they have things like hours of service, which can really jack you up if you violate that. And of course, that's where they're trying to legislate sleep, like you can do that. But in any event, they do. You know, you violate that, you got nowhere to park, then you just pull over. Now you violated another rule. So I can't imagine why anyone is choosing to drive under these conditions.
I do not take the expressway or highway anywhere anymore.
Well, good luck on that.
If I can't get there going down a street or an alley, I'm not going.
All right. Well, there you are.
Oh, and then with James's story with the airplane.
Yeah.
That happened to me one time on a flight. Okay, I had a timeshare in Aruba. I was going back and forth many years. I took my sister with me one year. We booked our flight. This is when you could pick your seats and everything.
Yeah.
We picked on the left side of the aisle, the bulkhead.
Okay.
Because I was tired of people slamming their chair back, hitting me in the face, having to climb over the armrest, and I'm only 4'11".
So, okay, you get there, and someone's in your seats?
Not someone. Someone's, all their crap they had was on our seats. And I look to my right, and it's an older couple, and they're like, I hope you don't mind. There's plenty. The plane's almost empty. You can sit back. And I was like, I picked that seat for a reason. Well, you can sit back. My sister grabs me and makes me sit down. And I'm thinking, the first time they put their chair back, I'm going to be up out of my seat and in their face.
I would, too.
And tell them, you either don't put your chair back or take the empty seat you made me get out of and put it back.
Right.
So I kind of got even with them in a passive-aggressive way.
Yeah, all right. All right.
My sister's like, let's play cards. And I go, okay, you know, I didn't know a lot about cards. Let's play gin rummy. Okay, run the rules by me. I don't know. I must have had beginner luck because I was winning hand after hand after hand. And when I'd say to her, first time I said, what's this called? She goes, gin. Put all my cards down. And every hand that I won, I was singing, won't you play with my ding-a-ling?
Oh, Jesus.
My ding-a-ling. My ding, just to irritate the hell out of these people that thought they were entitled to my seat.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a reason I don't fly commercially. I just don't get involved in it, period.
I'm
much more interested in your timeshare here. Did you get out of it finally? Do you still have it? What's the deal?
Well, when I bought it, it was a brand new thing down in Aruba.
All right, but I mean,
it was, you bought X amount a week.
Yeah, no, I understand how that works, but you still have
it? Well, they had one. Then they came up with the ones that were for life.
Or wait a minute. Are you saying you bought X number of weeks and per year or per?
You pick a week. Okay,
the
second or third week of January.
Yes,
and we bought that at 40 weeks.
Okay, so that's 40 years.
If you only go once a week. They made it very easy to borrow, because if we went out for 2 weeks, they took a week off the end and stuck it on there.
All right.
With the lifetime one, you can't do that. You have to buy two lifetime ones if you want to go for 2 weeks.
Well, I'm totally against the concept. I was just curious how it was for you, but it worked out.
So it did, because I kept telling my sister, you know, we get the timeshare. We pay it off when we come down here. We're paying, what, $250 a week.
All right.
Which you can't beat. And then all of a sudden, you know, some relatives wanted to come. So my sister's like charging them double. So it was paying for their room and my room.
Nice sister. All right. Well, good. So, but that came to a close successfully and you're not on the hook.
No, we used all the weeks up.
Excellent.
Actually, I had like 2 weeks left and they sold the whole hotel. They ripped down all of it except the area where my timeshare was and rebuilt this giant monstrosity called the Ryu.
Okay.
They're all over the world. And it's all gated in now and everything. When we were there, it was the only hotel. Now, you imagine we're at sea level or below. We were right at the ocean, and our hotel had an Olympic-sized pool 12 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and nobody else had that, so everybody that was taking scuba lessons had to come to our pool to learn how to use scuba gear.
Oh, that's funny. So with the last 2 weeks, what happened? Did you use them?
You had your choice of being bought out or getting something in a country I didn't want to go to. So
you were bought out. Good deal. All right.
It wasn't that much money, but still it was sad to see it go because my son basically grew up at that hotel.
Wow.
It was like family. Everybody knew everybody from year after year after year.
Well, that's nice. All right.
And to go to a country where 98% of the people speak English was like really great.
Well, really great or really awful, depending on how social you wanted to be. All right.
Well, if you were lost and they didn't speak English, they put up their finger 1 minute, they get in their car, you follow them, they take you to where you want to go. You give them $5 and they're happy because it was like $10 of their money.
Yeah. All right. Well, excellent. Glad it worked out.
Yes. Oh, and one more thing. When you were talking about that guy that stole that security cart.
Yes.
Didn't that remind you of OJ?
No, oh, the slow speed chase.
The
slow speed
race. People on the side cheering for.
Right, right. Not really, but I understand the what you're saying there. But I still
similarity.
I get that. But I still want to know who the hell steals the security cart and, you know, at 17 miles an hour thinks they're going to evade. Well, obviously someone very drunk, but I didn't know you could get that drunk and still be standing.
Well, either that or...
No, he was.
George Collin used to do a bit about smoking pot, and he says,
no.
How bad of an accident can you get into driving 5 miles an hour?
Right. No, this guy admitted he was drinking, so he was drinking.
I thought maybe he went to a dispensary.
No, he was drinking.
17 miles an hour was Indianapolis.
Right. Yeah, well, that would be true. But no, he actually was drinking, but I don't know how the logic could, the brain synapses could make that okay, and you're still able to stand. So anyway, there you have it.
Who knows? Maybe that was a light day for him to drink.
I'd like, it could have been. I'd love to have been to the next morning court proceedings when they bound him over for whatever.
Yeah. I'd like to be his doctor checking out his liver.
Oh, well, there, yeah. Well, what can I say? Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. Ah, now, before we do anything else, well, actually, no, I better do this right now. But Jane called back on a request, so don't go away, Jane, and I won't either. I'll be moments from now talking to Jane on WGN Radio.
When I die, I hope to be a better man than you thought. What kind of man I'm trying to be. All I ask for you to try to understand what it means to me. It's not hard.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Motherload, a medley of their hit When I Die, 1969 on Revolver. They were a racially mixed Canadian group, racially mixed because of keyboardist William Smitty Smith, who actually was from Belleville, Virginia. Later became a big session museum. Ricky Lee Jones, among many others, died of a heart attack in 1997. But in any event, the remaining three were your typical Canadians, and they were formed in London, Ontario. And so they get on this little label there, Revolver, and Buddha is distributing it. And Buddha is just excited as all hell because, man, When I Die, it looks like it's going to be a mega hit. Okay, it peaked at number 18 this week. But even so, it looked like it was going to do well, and in some areas did a lot better than that. And so they signed them. They signed them to a contract and an international distribution agreement in 1969. The group broke up in January of 1970. That was before the second album could be released. Now, Revolver Records owned the name. So, and they were, of course, in a profit share on this. So they tried to build a new group around Smitty, figure, well, we'll just get some other guys. And bottom line is they broke up for good in 1971. But that's why that's a medley of their hit that peaked on this week in 1965. So Jane is in Milwaukee, and she called back to give us our request. So whatever it is, we'll play it. So, all right, Jane, what do you want to hear?
Can you do two songs for one person?
Well, what do you want to hear? It depends what you want to hear.
Okay, one's called By the Sea From that movie, Some Like It Hot.
Probably
Tony
not.
Curtis, remember, years ago?
Yeah, the problem is, we're looking for, like, obscure R&B records and stuff like that, not pop standards.
Then there was another one, but I don't think you
what
probably care for it, maybe.
What is it?
It's a theme from Terrace Boba, starring Yul Brynner and Tony Curtis.
Yeah, you got the wrong show, Jane.
Oh, dear, those are intense, too, aren't they, though?
All right.
That would have been nice. Yes. My friend was trying to reach me, and that's why we got ripped off here.
Well,
and
sorry you had to wait so long for that. But yeah, if it's obscure R&B, you probably hit a winner. And other than that,
I knew some R&B tunes, but not too many, because I'm 67 years old.
Well, you're a youngster.
What did you say?
You're a youngster.
Oh yeah. But I was born during the times when the pop rock came out. You know what I mean? Talking about.
Oh, absolutely. It's not because you're too old. That's for sure. Maybe because you're too young. I'm not sure.
I feel older than I am because I got too many health problems, and I wish I had a better body and all kinds of stuff. And I only wish well for everybody. And my motto is: United we stand, divided we fall. Because I think everybody should be treated all good. You know,
sure.
That's just me. You know, I'm just basically I do cleaning in a casino, and you don't want to know what I do.
Oh boy, I'll bet you have stories. That's for sure. I hope.
Yeah, stories that make you laugh your head off, and all kinds of stuff that and all the cleaners that have cleaned the same things that I've done, they can all tell you the same stories that I can't repeat over the air.
Oh, I'll bet. I'll just bet that's true, man. Well, I hope you go home and disinfect after that shift.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, what I did was I was told that I would first disinfect my gloves, then take them off, wash my hands again, and put a new pair on, because I always stuffed them in my pockets, because you don't know what you don't know, and it's
yeah,
you know?
Right. Oh, man.
Yes, I was always as careful. I used to clean rooms in hotels, and that was even worse, and I will never do that again, because you don't know what you'll get when you open the doors. And I clean in a casino now, and that's bad enough, you know, but it's not as bad as cleaning rooms in a hotel room, because I did that for years, and I never want to do that kind of work again, because people just sometimes, I think, they mess up the rooms just to be funny, to think, look what we did, haha, they got all this stuff to clean up that, you know, and it ain't funny if you're cleaning it up, you know what I mean? I think they just mess up some of those rooms sometimes to be funny, you know what I mean? That wasn't right, you know?
Okay, so I got to ask you, since you were cleaning the rooms, I know they change the sheets, but I often wonder, how often do they change the blankets and the bedspreads?
Almost never.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I'm thinking to myself, and this is sanitary? How? So
the only thing they changed all the times was the when we had certain rooms that weren't used, like, say, for airlines, we didn't have, and then there was nothing used. We never even changed nothing, or just opened the door and closed it and left. But otherwise, we changed the sheets when they used them every time. But the blankets and that was almost never.
Yeah.
I don't even know when they did it, because it was so rare, it wasn't funny.
Oh, I know. And that's why every time I've gone to a hotel, I'm like manic. I'm like, don't touch the blanket. Don't touch the bedspread.
No, you don't know what's in that room. And if they got stinky food in there, like the foreigners, I cleaned rooms once for these Japanese people that the room stunk, like high oven, I call it. And I didn't know, I don't speak Japanese, so I just bowed to him when I was done, because I didn't know what to do.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
Cause I don't know what to do. I don't speak their language. I like Asians, but I just thought, how do I talk back to you? You just can't, you know? And know very little Spanish. Like when we had to go up to the casino tables to get the trash, I would say hola, you know?
Yeah.
Which means hi in Spanish, but I only know one word here, one word there. I can't do sentences, and we only had Spanish in school for 1 year, and I can't remember half of what I learned. And that's the only easy language as far as foreign language that I thought was easy to learn. Other than that, none.
I got to ask you about the bathrooms. Now, obviously, if there are towels on the floor or in the tub, you have to change those. But let's say somebody checks out and there's still a couple towels that are hanging the way they're supposed to be. Do you change them anyway?
No.
Just leave them there.
Right. And sometimes we had to put all brand new stuff in there and stuff. And you just never know what they were going to do in those rooms, because I cleaned all kinds of stuff that would... you don't even want to know about
it. Oh, God.
And we never got enough money in those days, which was sad. And the rich people, you were lucky to get a can of soda from them as far as tips go, or nothing. And usually the people that did tip were the businessmen only. You know, they gave a dollar or two, and, you know, that was it. And we were happy then because we didn't make much money, but the ladies never tipped. It was always the businessmen only. And then sometimes they threw pennies on the floor.
Oh, God.
And sometimes I didn't even see them until I started vacuuming.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, really.
Well, I've noticed now a lot of hotels that are renovating are no longer putting in carpets. They're putting in, I swear it's linoleum that's made to look like wood.
I have no idea because the place I work at, I never stayed in their room because I didn't want to, and I had nobody to stay in. And even if I did, I had a cat at one time, and I didn't want to leave her alone because she was my honey buns, you know. Yeah, I don't have a pet right now because pets cost money. My sisters help pay for them. And if you got a cat, you don't want to know some of the things that they do, that even though they do those things, you're your cat, you love them, you'll just clean it up and say, well, that's it, because you love them, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, pets always, because I had cats before in a house my parents had, and you don't want to know what they did, the same thing, only they did it in the basement. You can take a guess what that was.
Oh, lovely, just lovely.
Yeah, all that right. Smell is, it doesn't come out. It doesn't come out.
Oh, I'll bet never, I'm sure that's right.
Yeah, because we tried everything. My dad hung bags of coal down there, and it just, I don't know.
All right.
That was too bad, you know. If there was a cure for that, I don't know.
Okay.
That's too bad, but I loved them all just the same, you know. Yeah.
All right, well, good deal. Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
All right, well, I don't know too many R&B tunes. Because I was brought up during the pop rock time, and when like Paul Revere and Raiders came out, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I used to run home from school just to watch that show, and they had Hullabaloo. Remember Hullabaloo?
Very well. Hullabaloo, Shindig, Where the Action Is.
Yeah,
yes,
I used to watch all those shows, Soul Train and everything.
Yeah, sure.
You know, all the good stuff. Yeah.
Right.
And I wish they still had a lot of that old stuff, because that's when I watch a lot of old shows now, and I don't like watching anything new. I'm just basically, you know, someone said you're like a 60s chick, and they said that the way I decorated my apartment, they said, you're a 60s chick. They said, I said, well, yeah, pretty much, even though I was born in 55, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny, you know, yeah. But the good old days were much better. I think people were a lot nicer, and teachers were. Everything was better. Don't you agree? And everything was a lot cheaper and affordable, and everybody was a lot nicer. Don't you agree?
I think the brain is interesting. We remember the good things. And when I first noticed this was in the 60s, when a lot of the World War II guys were talking about the great fun they had in the war. And I thought, my God, these people saw horror and just really bad times. And what they remembered were the good times. And I think we do that. So we look at the past and we remember all of the good things about them. But, you know, every time has both good and bad, no doubt about
it. Yeah, we wish it was last forever, like our pets that we loved and our parents.
Well, of course.
I miss my mom and dad with a passion. Oh,
absolutely. All right. Well, you're going to end the half hour, I do think, but thanks for calling.
All right. Well, thank you.
Good deal.
Have a good night.
You too.
Okay.
All right. I do think that we forget the atrocities. We remember the good things. Now, I too, you know, I think if I could live in the 50s forever, I probably would. But that said, that's because I'm not remembering some of the things that used to drive me absolutely crazy. So we'll pick it up there on WGN Radio.
Out of of sight, out of mind. So the story goes, you forgot I exist. My broken heart knows, out of sight, out of mind.
I'm Raleigh James. That was, of course, of the Five Keys. You played Wisdom of a Fool last week, and Jimmy Fee said, how about some Out of Sight, Out of Mind? Absolutely happy to do that on the Capitol label, the old purple Capitol label, if it's in your collection. 1956, a fine song it is. We got another hour to talk to you. We'll be talking to Johnny D and James and Cindy. Plenty of room. And if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, providing it's inconsequential, nonsensical, or otherwise entertaining on WGN Radio. Those are the Avantes, Memphis's own, on Argo, Chicago's own, 1963. Keep on Dancing, the originals. Yeah, first time I heard it, I said, oh, that's what the Gentrys were trying to sound like. Well, the Gentrys, who had a hit with that a couple years later, were on Hullabaloo, singing that This Week in 1965. The Gentrys were also a Memphis group. Larry Raspberry, as in Larry Raspberry and the High Steppers, led it. And that was originally on Chip Moman's Youngstown label, the Gentrys version in Memphis. And then the hit, of course, came out on MGM. But we were talking about Hullabaloo. And this week in 1965, you were seeing the Gentrys trying to be half as good as the Avantes and failing. So 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. Johnny D is in Youngstown. What's happening tonight, Johnny D?
Yeah, hi, Raleigh. Thought I'd call because, well, you and your listeners, the 20, 25 people that listen to you,
that many?
You're the only people I get. Well, that's what my brother said.
Okay, just checking. That's a lot.
Remember
that? Yeah.
He said, he was telling my nephew, he says, this woman named Raleigh James comes on late at night. She's got a listenership about 20, 25 people. Anyhow.
Don't tell the advertisers.
No, I thought I'd call because these are the only people. You see, Becky's always getting her beauty sleep.
Yeah.
At this time. All right. And Caesar's gone. So I ain't got nobody to talk to except you and your listenership.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and here you are. Woof.
Listen, actually why I called, because there's a couple things you were talking about last night, and I also called because you're the only people I get to talk to at night.
Yeah.
Anyhow, okay, yeah, this song you played last night. How come my dog don't bark when you come around?
Yes,
when you come around.
Right, you say you never met my wife, never saw her before. You don't visit me when I am home. Well, here's what I want to know. How come my dog don't bark when you come around?
Right. And I never heard that guy that you played it last night,
Prince,
whoever
Prince,
that.
Prince but, Partridge.
Okay. Well, but I did hear that song before on YouTube. I was watching Louis Prima, Ed Sullivan show appearances, okay?
Uh-huh.
And Louis Prima did that song. And that's where I heard it before. So I looked it up today.
Uh-huh.
And he's got he recorded it. It's called, but he calls it Song About a Story About a Dog. Okay? So I was going to request that, if you could play that.
Uh-huh. I don't think I have the Louis Prima version. Now, of course, the Prince Partridge is the original. You do understand that. And
well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
I'm thinking,
and of course, he wrote it. And so Prince Partridge did.
Yeah, but Louis Prima, he kind of destroyed it.
Yeah, he kind of destroyed it. The best version, without a doubt, is Prince Partridge that I played last night.
I thought he didn't. I didn't think he destroyed it. I thought it was pretty funny.
All right. Well, it's funny when Prince does it, too.
So, all right. Yeah. There was that. And then I wanted to tell you, I did also two other things today after you. We were having that conversation about doing a search for my grandfather's military.
Yes, and by the way, I actually spent time on that and have come up with absolutely nothing so far.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't come up with...
Because I
used your last name without any first name at all and couldn't come up with anybody in World War I named that. Now, that doesn't...
Are you saying I'm making this stuff up or
something? No,
no.
What I'm saying is, remember I told you last night there was a fire. And so a lot of the original records are lost forever. So the only hope is that a state kept good records, but not every state did. So, you know, a genealogist would be able to look a lot further. But from a quick online search, it doesn't show up. But no, you're not lying.
I did a couple of things.
Yeah, what'd you find out?
And it brought me, I said... World War One military records, and right. Then I put his name. It brought me to some site.
Yeah,
and then I put his name in, and there was some kind of paper that you can't read. You know, and it said his. You know, it gave some information about him, and then it sent me to a census.
Right. Yeah, I know.
And I. 1940 and 1950 censuses.
Yeah, but that's much later. Of course, you can see him in the census if you want to do that, but that's not going to tell you about his military service.
No, it didn't. It didn't. But I was amazed at the census because, you know, it had the addresses. Because that house that my grandparents lived in,
yeah,
actually, it's still there, you know. But anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had the address, you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's the address.
Right, and if he was
and
head
then
of...
And it had all my, even my uncle that died.
Yeah, anybody...
Giacomo.
Right, anybody who was living in the household, if Joe was the head of household, his information would come first, and then everybody below him would come first, and their ages and other information about them. That's
right.
That's every census.
Because it was my uncle's, you know, my Uncle Angelo, my... Dad,
mm-hmm.
and my Aunt Mary, and my Uncle Jack,
mm-hmm.
and Giacomo.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably in the 40s, I think. I don't know.
Well, 1950, it would be the first week of April 1950 that census was taken.
All right.
So
well, anyhow, I found that.
Oh, sure. You can find that. You can find that on all your relatives, and you don't only have to look at the 1950 census. You can go back and look at just about any of them. There's one that's missing again because of a fire, but other than that, they're all there, and you can easily trace them back into the 1800s if they were here then.
No, he wasn't here then.
Yeah, but how about your mother's side of the family?
I never did that.
Well,
I never did that.
Well, you can. Think about your mother when she was a girl and her maiden name, and you can probably see her as a child in one of these censuses, like 1940, and you can see her mom and dad listed at top of the list and the address and all that. You can do that.
Yeah. Well, the one from my dad's father, they had even I used to call her Anan. I don't know if Anan means grandma, and, you know.
I don't know.
Because there was Unun and Anan. But anyhow, was my great grandmother, all right? My grandmother's mother. And she lived at that house too,
uh-huh.
with my grandfather.
Uh huh.
You know. So anyhow.
Now, interesting. When I looked up your name, and we're just going to call you Johnny D. But when I looked up the D name, it was interesting that I also found a line in Texas, and the head of household there was Henry. And I don't know if he's a relative or not.
Not that I know of.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's not a very common name.
I know. Well, I know. That's why I said that. Yeah. No,
I don't know of any other relative. There's some other of my name, but they spell it differently.
No, well, Henry spelled it exactly the same, and he was born in Iowa in 1892. And in 1940, he was living in Houston in Harris County. And, he was 48, and his wife, Ruth, was 43, and had four children, Charles, Donald, Lyle, and Douglas. But what's interesting is that the wife's last name wasn't the same. So Henry's was, but the wife was O-E-L-K-F-K-E, which I thought was interesting. So what you don't know when you look at it by hand, was it all under this OEL name and someone just spelt it wrong on Henry? You know, we don't know.
I don't know.
Well, nobody does, because as you know, when you look at them, when you look at the actual census, it's written by hand.
Yeah, right, right.
Right, right. And so,
yeah, they had like a, you know, like a photocopy
right,
of...
Right, exactly.
And yeah, but I didn't enlarge that. I should have looked.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fun. That's actually fun. And if you go back to some of the early ones, you can get more information, and it's actually interesting to see what you'll see.
Well, Riley, I don't do that much searching.
Well,
but I'm sure... If there's a way to check military records of World War One of the United States,
Ohio,
Oh no, guess what else I did? So I called the cemetery that he's buried in.
Uh-huh.
It's called Calvary Cemetery in Youngstown.
Uh-huh.
All right, and some woman answered the phone. This woman was such a biatch. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, I'm saying, yeah, I'm going to be as pleasant as I could be, which is hard, you know.
Right, understood.
So I'm saying, yes, ma'am. I says, I'm calling. I said, my grandfather's buried at your cemetery, at the cemetery there. And I wanted to get some information if I can, you know. And she's going, and she's like, I don't know, saying funny things when I'm talking. Like, yeah. And then, what do you mind knowing, sir? You know, like that.
Right.
And I says, what I'd like to know is on his placard or, you know,
headstone
there, you know, and my grandpa's, I distinctly remember, it's like a medal, like a military medal type thing, you know?
Right, yes.
But my grandmother's and my other people, family, are just marble or something, okay?
Uh-huh.
But anyhow... So I said, yeah, I'd like to know what's on that placard, what it reads. We don't have any information on that, sir. I mean, this woman was really... So I told her, you know, I said, well, you know, I was thinking, she said, no, sir, he's in Section 8. You know, she gives me the section. I
right.
know where he's buried, you know.
Right.
And then, anyhow, so I said, well, I'll tell you what, ma'am,
What's
you know,
the name?
Sorry to bother you. You're about as pleasant as a grapefruit.
Okay, well, that's actually being. What do you have against grapefruit? Now, let me ask you. let me ask you this: what's the name of the cemetery?
Calvary. Calvary.
Oh. And what city?
I don't know how to spell it.
I can spell it. What city?
Youngstown. Mahoney Valley.
Okay, let's see if I can do it on Find a Grave. Okay, here what? We go. I found it on Find a Grave. Now, okay, I know the last name, so that's all I'm going to do right now. Let's search the cemetery. And I've got Esther White with your last name. Died in 1967. I can see her headstone here. Jack D. died in 2005.
That's my uncle.
PFC Joseph.
That's it.
Okay, well, let me look at his headstone. All right, I'm looking at his headstone. Now, of course, with my vision, I have to, like, lean close in and hope to God, but let's see here. So it says, Joseph, last name, Ohio, PFC COA-135 MGPN, World War I, February 19th, 1893. That's when he was born, I guess. And
yeah.
Although this one says February 19th, 1892 for his birth. But anyway, I'm looking at the cemetery, the plate itself, and it looks like 1893 to me. But anyway, he died in March of 1964. And yeah, so I'm looking at his
I'll be down.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that.
Well, yeah, you do. You're just not thinking about it. All right, so let me, uh-oh. Now I'm in trouble. I've dropped the glasses. I can't see a thing. All right, well, which is just as well. So I'll do it with my eyes shut. Here's the deal. You just go to findagrave.com. That's one way to do it. And then just look for the, you know, Calvary Cemetery, Youngstown.
Is that a free service?
It's all free. Are you kidding?
I don't know.
If you just do it in a plain old search, all right, just a plain old search, write find a grave, all one word, find a grave, and then write Calvary Cemetery, Youngstown. And actually what I did to get there the easy way is I just wrote find a grave, Calvary Cemetery, Youngstown, and I put your last name.
Okay, very good. I'll remember.
Yes, yeah, so he is
I
in
se- write it down,
he is in section 8 and he is in lot 348.
All right, play that number, 348.
All right, so yes, he's there, and you can.
Right,
and you, by the way, on this headstone, if you copy down the information, and you'll be able to see this better than me. But if you copy down the information, you'll know more about his military records.
Well, how do I know that?
Because they have the COA-135 MGPN. That means something.
Yeah, it means machine gunning something.
Well, but what I'm saying is if you start looking up with PFC COA-135 MG, that A-135...
That means private, I don't know what it
but
means.
The A-135...
You mean if I put that in as a search, it'll tell me something?
It might. I
have to go to that grave site again. Find a grave.
Find a grave and then just put Calvary Cemetery in your last name.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, one last thing, though, Raleigh.
Uh-huh.
Last night you were saying, and I've heard you say it before, that fire, you know, we're talking about...
Divine intervention,
Dawn,
yes. Uh-huh.
Dawn from Beloit.
Right.
And
yes.
I apologize to Dawn. I should have remembered. I wasn't thinking last night, but Dawn Corleone, I mean, Dawn from Beloit.
Yes.
The Dawn from Beloit. Is it Beloit or Beloit?
Beloit. B-E-L-O-I-T.
Okay,
Beloit.
B.
B like boy, yes.
Dawn from Beloit, you were talking about, you know, things that, you know, change humanity. And you always say the will, and then you said, and then you always say that I believe fire was divine intervention.
Correct,
right?
I do.
Now, you know, so you don't know about Prometheus, do you?
Well... Even so, hang on a minute. Don't go away, all right? Because I got to find these glasses. Stay where you are. We'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Funny no more. 16 and oh, what a dream. Ain't it strange?
Radio. I'm Raleigh James. See, what happened was when I was looking for a copy of the Avantis' Keep on Dancing to play for you, I'd come across this, which is the Avantis, not the same Avantis, clearly doing a cover of Neil Sedaka's Next Door to an Angel. And it came out on Ranger Records. And I, you know, started to wonder, I said, well, I think that was Minneapolis. And I think it was Sound 80 that mastered their stuff. But I don't think there was more than like two or three records. And so I spent an inordinate amount of time last night when I wasn't looking at World War I stuff trying to find out who were these Avantis. I never did find out. Who owned Ranger Records? Never did find out. I know about Sound 80. I didn't need to look for that. In fact, Mark Durenberger, who used to be a chief engineer at WCCO, he was a mastering guy there years ago. Maybe I'll just find him and ask him, but I don't know. I have no idea who those Avantis are. I guess it will go down to, we'll always wonder. We won't worry much about fire. We'll get back to Johnny D. and I don't know, the Olympic gods or more. And then, let's see, we've got Donna Malloy. You mentioned Rudolph Isley that we talked about earlier. We've got James in Oregon, website for military info. I don't know if he's looking for one or he has one. Richard in Chicago. Hazel Scott. Well, there you go. That's a while ago. Cindy in Norwich wants to talk about cats. All right. You are spoken for on WGN Radio.
To me, I didn't get a chance to ask her to dance. It was love at first sight. I just saw her tonight. And I wish somebody would introduce her to me. I like the way she danced in the dark and disappeared.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It'd be 9 years later, they put it out again as That Lady on T-Nick, and it would be a hit. But in 1964, the Isley Brothers, Rudy, and, well, all three of them, were doing Who's That Lady, which they wrote, and it came out on United Artists. All right, so 888-876-5593. Back to fighting words. And, you know, this sort of is fighting words, not between Johnny D and I, but the issue of a fire, which, like I keep saying, is divine intervention. There are individuals who will fight to the death on that. And so, you know, are we going to now look at the Olympic gods or Greek mythology? Is that where we're going, Johnny D?
Well, the story goes, Raleigh, in Greek mythological gods, there was a guy named Prometheus.
Yeah,
right?
he was the god of forethought and fire.
Right. And Zeus got mad at him for giving mankind the secret of fire.
Right. He defied the Olympian god, stealing fire and giving it to humanity in the form of technology.
Yes. Yeah, and what was his punishment?
The punishment for stealing fire was
giving it to mankind.
Zeus condemned him to eternal torment. He was bound to a rock, and I think an eagle ate his liver.
Right. Every day for eternity.
Because the liver would grow back overnight, and then it would be eaten. Yeah. So it was a well-fed eagle. And apparently there are several major versions of this in terms of whether he was freed and by whom, and whether his struggle is on one mountain or another mountain.
Yeah, well, he should have never gave mankind fire. We'd still be in the Stone Age.
Well, actually, when you look at the history of fire, and I do believe, again, that it's divine intervention. In other words, I believe that that mankind was able to see it from nature as far as that goes. But some of the earliest instances were the dinosaur days, supposedly. And, you know, the main source of ignition, you know, lightning strikes before humans got involved, as usual. So there were periods in history when Earth's oxygen levels were a lot higher than they are now, making fire a little easier to produce and be hotter also and all that. So then, of course, the spread of the grasslands, you know, 7 million years ago. These are in your Cro-Magnon people, probably.
The savannas.
Yeah, right, exactly. So they didn't, you know, by discovering fire, yeah, it's by viewing it, by seeing it. And also when they saw the charred dead animals, that probably gave them a good idea for dinner. And
Right.
So the savannas needed the fire, or the vegetation would convert to scrub and be a problem. So the fire actually was something that recycled it, as far as that goes.
Well, I'm getting a history lesson here.
Well, but what I'm saying is now you get, when was the first human interaction? I mean, historians love to argue about this stuff, and it might have been 1.5 million years ago in Africa. Of course, the question would be not how to see fire, but how to control fire. And,
you know,
of course, so
Erectus did that.
Yeah. So that's right. So, you wanted the ability to start it on your own. You wanted the ability to control it. And, but the bottom line is, you know, people will often say, when did the cave dwellers discover fire? Well, they didn't discover it like out of thin air. They saw it because of nature. That's why I say fire is divine intervention. But the wheel was a creation. And I think the wheel, the development of the wheel, is probably the biggest change humanity as we know it has ever gone through.
Yeah, you know when that was?
I don't know when exactly.
Well, I'll tell you. It was the people called the Umaya or something like that.
I know it was Mesopotamia as far as that.
No, it was over in, it was over in Eastern Europe.
Oh, I thought it was Sumeria.
Look up the Yumnaya.
Yumnaya.
Anyhow, I'll let you go, Raleigh, because I'm sure you have other callers. So,
no, that's interesting. I just looked it up. 3500 BC, invented in Lower Mesopotamia, where the Sumerian people inserted rotating axles into solid disks.
Well, this was 3,000 years.
So we have to find earlier wheels. I will look for that. Thanks.
Yumnaya people.
Okay.
Yumnaya.
All right.
Okay.
So. Yeah, sounds like a fast food menu item. Yamnaya. It's Yamnaya, but Yamnaya, and that was like Copper Age, I think. But anyway, I digress. Clearly, but I do think that the wheel changed landscape more than anything else. And then since then, the only real change we've had is the lead up to digital, I think. And we don't know what the other side of that's going to be. We have some indication as yet, but it is a game changer all the way around. And you already see it with how people interact with each other. All right. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. James in Oregon, are you still there?
Yeah, I am here.
All right. So are you giving me a website, or are you asking for a website?
Yeah. No, I've got a couple of websites.
All right,
I was going to call yesterday, but my phone was acting up.
Let's hear them.
There's one, and you might have given it out. It's called militaryrecords.org.
Yes.
But now what I did is I have copies of my father's discharge papers and his DD-214 from World War II. And, you know, those are the ones that were lost in the fire.
Right.
They had a fire in the record center back around in the 60s, I believe.
Now,
and I, uh, when, they,
I wanted to say before you go on any further, militaryrecords.org is no longer online. It's available for sale. The domain's available.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh,
wow. It's gone.
Okay. Okay. Well, or just look for military records. Maybe there's a .com or something now. I don't know.
Sure.
But anyways, what they were doing, what I did is I sent them copies of my father's stuff because they were also not the, what they were doing is not only giving you information. What they could find is they were trying to rebuild the records too. So
right.
Anybody out there has got relatives and stuff, got copies of their records, they can submit them to that record center. I think it's in St. Louis, I believe.
And there's ways to request them as well. And I think that the National Archives has pages on this. So archives.gov/veterans will give you, and it's even got links to how to request the records.
Yeah, and I know because I sent them copies of my father's, and also they can, he was in South Pacific World War II, and they were able to just look at where he had been, and then they were able to send me information about where he had been, because not all information was lost, but a lot of it was. And then there's another one called togetherweserve.com.
Oh, okay.
And I think when you first come up there, it'll ask you which branch of service you were in, and then you build yourself a home page like that, and then you can do searches in there and find out like that kind of stuff.
Togetherweserve.com. My choices when I get there are ship station alternatives, find Army veterans, or incident management.
Yeah. So mine, of course, is Navy. So you can do that. And that's a pretty good site there. It's almost like a Facebook type thing. You build your home page like that, but you don't get all the bad stuff on there. It's just people, your brothers in arms, so to speak.
Yeah, if you want to get involved to the degree that you want to build a website, but if you're just trying to find the records, National Archives might be a starting point.
Yeah, and then that what you were saying, that COA on Johnny's granddad, that's the company he was in. In the Army, you got battalions, companies, and
so that's what I'm
so
saying.
Forth.
So that might give him some information.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking under if not the national, maybe in that Together We Serve, if he would build a homepage, let's say for his grandfather, and then put what company and stuff in there, he might pull up some other information also.
Like I say, if you're looking to take the time to do that, I don't know that he is.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, it takes time.
Yeah.
But I received my father's, when I sent his stuff in, they actually sent me back replacement medals of his medals he earned in the war and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of that good stuff they do for you.
Oh, absolutely. Like it's easier in World War II than World War I, but nonetheless, you've got a lot of information. Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you got your stuff.
Yeah. So anyways, that was it. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, good information. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
All right. Talk to you soon. So absolutely. But I don't know what happened to militaryrecords.org. It is not there. All right. But the domain is for sale should you be entrepreneur-ish about those kind of things. All right. So we'll get to Don. We'll get to Richard and Cindy, too, we hope, on WGN Radio. I do not, yes I do.
yeah, 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 I do. I love you, my baby. Yes, I do. I want you, my baby. Yes, I do. I need you, my baby. Yeah, 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 I do.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and those are the Marvellos or the Marvellos, and that fight will continue. I'll let you decide. There's another group on the West Coast, the Marvellos, L-L-O-S, as opposed to L-O-W-S. So our Marvellos or Marvellos became the Mighty Marvellos or Marvellos. And, of course, their big hit, though, as the Marvellos, was I Do, 1965 on ABC. It was actually one of the group members' mothers who went to school with Johnny Pate, who had do an A&R for ABC Paramount at the time, said, hey, call him. And the rest was history for I Do, which was a wonderful song. Yeah. And actually, they had a number of things that were really nice. A Friend, My Heart, but of course, I Do was the big one. Oh, I got to number 37 on the pop charts in 1965, but still, it was, as far as I'm concerned, just a great, great song. And it was Jimmy P who wanted to hear that. All right, so Don in Beloit wants another word about Rudolph. So, all right, Don.
Hey, how's it going, Riley? I was playing hockey before. I missed the early part of the show. But John said, yeah, you guys covered some Isley Brothers, I think, earlier.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can listen to the replay.
Yeah. Hey, we all care about Johnny D, you know, and I hope he's still listening, because you said a few things that were really interesting. I know what my World War I relatives did. I have, like, a great uncle that published, he self-published some stuff after the war, some great stuff, unbelievable. But, you know, I hope he should look into this. I mean,
yeah,
first of all, it's his grandfather, right? It's insane. I mean, for a war where millions served, like 18, 19 years old, his grandfather was 23 to 25 years old when mm-hmm. the war ended. So he was very much older than the typical, you know, typical doughboys, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you said a number, which I looked up, that was part of the great 37th Division.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was hundreds of battalions that did machine gunning, by the way. So mm-hmm. the U.S. made a priority to make hundreds of battalions. Battalions are gigantic. And I think he was in the 135th Machine Gun Battalion, mm-hmm. which was in Baccarat and St. Mihiel and Ypres, and the Ypres Offensive. And it finished the war in this giant thing called the Meuse-Argonne Offensive. So my advice to Johnny would be to go to the Kansas City, folks. The Kansas City we have a memorial to all of World War I who served in Kansas City. And I think he can get a volunteer there to do a lot of legwork for him on his uncle and on his grandfather. Yeah. I thought.
Well, no, that's good advice. I also think the National Archives in St. Louis, because there's a lot of things there. And the problem, again, is on some of these records, there was that fire. And so that becomes difficult. But official military personnel files in the Army, they are at that site in St. Louis. So sure, if he wants to take the time to do the legwork, you know, St. Louis is probably the mother lode. But if Kansas City is also a site, heck, he can take a road trip.
Hey, I'll let you go. I'll let
All
you go,
right.
Riley.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay, no problem. All right, no problem.
And closing the night out, I do believe, I'm afraid we're not going to get time for Richard, but I'm going to try. But Cindy in Norwich, if she's still with us. Cindy, are you there?
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, unfortunately, we only got about a minute, but go for it. It's your minute.
All right. Well, I have a family of cats under my porch, and the little kittens, I guess, are running all over the neighborhood. And I was trying to call animal control for about a month. He was on vacation. And I said, well, I'm feeding them until you come and get them. And he said, well, we don't come and get the cats anymore. They
Why is that? Because the RAF population?
No, I think it's personnel and time and all that. Very often in many cities, they'll give you the traps where you can trap them yourself, but they're not going to come and get them. Call me next week. Call me earlier. We'll talk more about it.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right. So do I have 30 seconds here? He probably has left us already. But Richard wanted to talk about Hazel Scott, and she used to have a TV show in the early days. So, Richard, we'll talk to you hopefully next week. Call me again. Thank you. All right. Well, Richard might already be gone, as I will right now. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. Makes all the difference for me. All right. So until Monday, and there'll be a live Monday night trivia. That's right. 3 big hours on Monday. That's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.